Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
MCs play a vital role at events. One of the things they do is content weave. They bring together all the content to tell one narrative. And I'll never forget the first time I saw Sarah Michelle do that. She's today's guest. She is a master at doing this. You don't want to miss this episode. Well, welcome everybody to another episode of the Event Innovator Show. Today, I'm super excited to be with Sarah Michelle. She is the Vice President of Professional Connectivity. I don't even think I can say that word, but you're going to explain what it means. She's been with Velvet Chainsaw for 14 years, and an unusual or fun fact about her is she's just picked up as a hobby water painting. So, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Phil. Glad to be here.
Say that word, Connexity. Is that how you say it?
Connexity. Connexity, okay. Which actually was when I joined the firm 14 years ago, they wanted me to come on as like, you know, vice president of networking, something like networking in the title. And I was like, networking is such a misunderstood word. And there's so many negative connotations to it. And it was actually Jeff Hurd, who you know, who had been reading about in the early 90s when Silicon Valley engineers were trying to come up, you know, came up with MySpace and some of those early social media sites. They took the word connecting and community and they put it together and they were calling it Connexity. And that's what they were trying to achieve with those online forums where people could come together, form a community, like-mindedness. So he found that word from the early 90s and said, that's what you should be. It should be, you know, you should be vice president of professional Connexity. And so that's what happened. And that's the term. And I get to explain it a lot, but it's basically when community and connection merge. And if you're in the meetings business, you're in the Connexity business.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. And how is that different from the networking you see it a lot of times, which is more about sales and lead generation? Is it the same or is it different?
No, different. So, you know, networking, transactional networking, talking to people just to get a lead, to get, to get some kind of potential business, that kind of transactional networking is not what Connexity is about. Connexity, and what I end up doing a lot at meetings is facilitating this because it is misunderstood. So how do we get, you know, create a space for people to connect and actually give them some tools on how to do this? Because a lot of people, everybody in every single meeting survey you will ever read, no matter the industry, you're going to see the number one reason why people come to face-to-face events is for networking. Everybody wants it. Most people don't know how to do it. And so the shameless self-promotion, the going into an event or going into an opening reception, you know, only scanning the room, looking for potential, you know, meet, you know, that you can go hit up, is not what this is about. And that's actually why so many people will avoid, you know, those events. You'll see people, you'll have, you know, you'll 500 people at your event and only 100 come to the opening reception. Why? Because, you know, they've had negative experiences of people only talking to them or, you know, talking and then looking over their shoulder to see who's next. So I try to, when I'm involved, is really try to create pathways for people to make true connections. And, you know, we can talk about some of the ways to do it, but there's ways to really create an environment where you're encouraging and facilitating true connection, getting people to connect on like-mindedness, getting people to figure out, you know, who, learning about people and finding out maybe what they do need help with, and then going back to your network and saying, who do I know? And then making connections with people, which builds your net worth, your social network. Right. So, but it does require that to be baked in. And there's a lot of things you can do pre-event to get that going, during, and then even post to keep those connections going.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I know this isn't where I thought we were going to go, but it's actually related to the other thing we're going to talk about because you like connecting things together. But yeah. Let me go back in time because Jeff told you that should be your title, but he probably didn't bring you on to Velvet Chainsaw because he saw that as the title you were going to have. He saw something about you and you already understood connections, I'm assuming. Is that true or did you learn it on the job?
Actually, Dave Lotz, who is the owner of Velvet Chainsaw, Jeff wasn't. But I think what happened was Dave and Jeff both at that time recognized that the reason why people came to events, why they came to meetings was for networking, and yet nobody knew how to do it. And they were trying to find, they had already been writing on it. So like 15 years ago, they were out there saying, this is why people come. And if you don't design for this, they're not going to come back. And so they saw me speak at PCMA. I did a session with a client that I designed a whole, you know, kind of Connexity experience for their 3-day meeting. And we had really good outcomes. And they came to my session and approached me after the session. That's how it happened.
That's amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So I met you at a SEMA conference, Corporate Event Marketing Association, where you and Jeff were the MCs at the event. And I know one of the things that you were there doing was helping us to connect. I'm going to ask a flip question because that's what I like to do here. What are a couple of the biggest mistakes that event planners do that prevent that real meaningful connection from taking place?
I think, you know, not baking it in intentionally. I mean, thinking that a reception with alcohol checks the box is the biggest mistake you can make, because most of your attendees are going to avoid that reception, or they're going to come for 5 minutes, have no one to talk to, feel really left out, and leave. So I think it starts with how we're, you know, thinking about baking it through the entire experience. And even beforehand, what can you be doing to facilitate it upon arrival? One of the biggest mistakes I think that planners miss is not doing a welcome experience. And I don't call them first timers, even though we're going to market to all the first timers. You also have to market and send emails to what we call solo attendees, the only one from their organization attending. You got to love them up just like you would a first timer, even if it's their second or third experience. If there's nobody there that they're coming with from their company, they have to feel welcome. So really baking in and designing a welcome experience that happens before the opening general, that happens on that first day, is also really important, because how you welcome people, that first impression is everything. It's everything.
I agree.
It will determine if they come back. Yeah, exactly. So I would say, you know, really the biggest mistake they make is thinking that they do a couple open bars and they're checking a box. And then that's going to be enough. It's not enough. And it's even, I think the other thing that has to happen, which I end up doing a lot of now for our clients, is the concurrent education sessions, which is what I call the main course. If you're looking at a traditional conference, like an association annual meeting, the concurrent education is where people are spending 75% of their time. We have to work with speakers, and they're mostly our member speakers who are not pros, on facilitating networking within the session and designing for peer-to-peer interaction. Talking head is dead. If you're still doing education with people standing in front of the room that, by the way, could have been delivered on Zoom, it shouldn't be in a room. I mean, that's not why people are showing up for meetings. They're showing up for that peer-to-peer learning and delivering networking value in those sessions. So it starts with getting our modeling, being a learning organization, and coming alongside your speakers and give them the training they need to know how to deliver that.
I think that's one of the biggest ahas I had a few years ago, is where do you have most of your attendees the majority of the day? It's in those sessions. It's not in the networking stuff that's in between. And so we're missing out if we don't design that. And I think you make a really good point. Can we train and encourage speakers to do it, not only the MCs? And I think, you know, we're going to talk about MCs because I think MCs play a huge role in this. Yeah. Having the right MC can mm-hmm. do that. Let's go there because later I want to come back to that welcome experience and opening. But since we're on this theme of the education and the MCs and the speakers, give us some tips. Whether you're a first-time event owner or you've been doing this a long time, this is a big opportunity for upgrade because you have a captive audience. They're coming for this. They come for the connections, but they tell the boss they're coming for the education. That's how they get it paid for, right?
Yeah. So the question is, what's your question?
Let's start with MCs. I know you call yourself a content weaver. So mm-hmm. let's talk about the role of MCs in promoting connection, not only of ideas, but of relationships within an event.
Yeah. So the beauty of an MC, and I think most planners, especially in the association world and also in corporate, is, if you're not using a professional MC, you're relying on a volunteer leader if you're an association, or you're relying on potentially your CEO or executive officer in your corporate. And both of those situations, 90% of the time, they're not skilled to do it. They're not good at doing it. And you're really handing over the keys to the main room experience, which, by the way, in that opening session or that daily, maybe it's the kickoff session, again, first impressions, again, setting the tone for the meeting. And you're kind of handing the keys to somebody who can just kill it, kill the vibe, kill the energy, kill that experience. What's great about an MC is, when I do this work, which is a lot of what I do, the client wants the CEO or wants the president of the board on stage, and I am on with them. So I bring them up on stage. I make them look good. I interview them. I keep the energy going. So good MC, you can still get your volunteer leader, CEO. You can get them on stage and they make them look like a rock star instead of sending them out there alone, knowing they're going to tank. And then having to just, explain to people why you had to do it. So the MC really, can really take the pressure off a planner. I mean, the planners I work with will just tell me, like, once they've done it, they're like, I'll never ever do it again without an MC. You will find that they become an MC for a planner becomes your right arm. It's your trusted, confidant. In my role, and I do call it more content weaving, because I'm traditionally involved way out, like 6 months out, at least 6 months out. And I do the run of shows. I work really closely with a producer, and I know I run the rehearsals on site. My planners know I have their back and the general session room is done. It's taken care of. You don't have to worry about it. You've got a million other things to worry about. Know that I'm managing the general session room. And so I'm intimately involved with the production producer. And I have that run of show so tight that I know exactly the transitions. I coach the executives that are going to go out on stage or the volunteer leaders so that they know. And then I'm so intimately involved with the message, if we're using a professional keynoter, that when I come out, I'm opening and closing the session, because really the content weaver is the bridge between the audience and what's happening on stage. So I'm setting them up for what's coming, be listening for this. And I come out at the end and usually bake in time, like, what were the great takeaways? So typically in a keynote, in a general session room, you're not going to, the speaker's probably not going to be super interactive, but they might have great content, hopefully very good content. And the content weaver or MC can come out and say, so what, now what? Now, what are you going to do with what you just heard? And facilitate people turning left or right, if you're set up in rounds, whatever. And get them to talk about what they just heard, getting that to frontal lobe executive functioning so it actually sticks. And I'm not talking about a lot of time. I'm talking about baking in 4 or 5 minutes for that to happen. And I've even had it where the session went to time and I had to come out and I had a minute and I closed on time. But what I said was, as you get up, as you go to break, I want you to find somebody right now to partner up with and share. And I gave them the assignment as they walked out to break instead of doing it in the room, which also works. So an MC, I just think really becomes that security blanket for planners that this is the, you know, this main room experience is going to be great. I don't have to worry about it.
You go farther than anyone I've ever heard of because you're basically becoming a show caller, or I don't know like what relevant title, because you're doing more than most MCs that I've heard of.
Yeah, I know. I know that it is more, but I love that. And a lot of associations that I'm on year four and year five with, that is what they love. And I love producing. I do love producing. And I am often on a headset. I can't totally call the show because I'm out there too much, but I am like in the ear with the producer and I'm saying, I want another minute on the clock. I want another 2 minutes on the clock. You know, where are we at? I'm on a headset. I am backstage and I am kind of backstage managing, so to speak. Depending on how big the show is, I might have to have somebody else just because I'm going on and off. But I know it's different, but I mean, I do sometimes do jobs, Phil, where I'm just truly an MC. That happens. Right. But my love is really being very involved with production, which is why I like to be involved really early.
Well, it gives you a lot of advantages because you can get to know the speakers. You can get to know the production team. You know all the players. They trust you that you're leading, whereas a last minute MC, you know, they don't know who you are. They just want you to do your thing. And that's about all you get to do. And so I think
I'm on all the pre-calls with the speakers. I'm on every call. And I'm often involved with selecting the speaker. So I'm very clear kind of what I'm doing in that early stage. And what a good MC should be doing is being really clear on, you know, what are the goals of the session? What do we want the attendees to walk out thinking, feeling, doing? What's the overall strategy of the event that what are the messages, the stories we want to tell? And sometimes I say, this isn't the right speaker, or this speaker is in the wrong order. As we want to tell this arc and tell this story, this doesn't make sense. So that's why I like to be involved early. We can flip that really quickly, or we can say, I mean, I was involved with one recently where we were going to, on the last day, hire a person, and we were pretty close to selecting. And then I really drilled down with the planner and the decision makers, what do we really want out of this? It became really clear that last session was a community building, coming together. They wanted action planning. They wanted this facility. And you remember, Phil, like kind of what we did with SEMA. That's what they wanted. And I was like, we don't need a speaker for that. I can do that as your MC. I can facilitate that. If that's what we want to have, save your money because I'm already there. And we don't need a speaker for that. And so, okay, that's what we did. So that's why I like to be involved early, as I often end up saving money for the client.
I'll just tell a quick story. What Jeff did, he had a title for that. He psyched us out, but it was like a clever sounding title. It was something about the neuroscience of community, or I don't even remember the title. But it was so intriguing. He's like, I can't miss this. And there was some content, but it was primarily goal setting and community building. And what he did, you know, to this day, I remember. Let's go back to the role of the MC in building community. So you've talked about one way, which is at the end of a session, getting people to talk to each other. What are some other tools in your tool bag to build community through your role as an MC?
Well, I like to do something at the beginning and the end of every general session. So it might be something as simple as getting them to talk to each other. Sometimes I get them to stand up. Depending on how tight, you know, what we've got going on. But I try to, at the bare minimum, I get them to do some kind of call response with me. I mean, that's if there's no time. But I'm always trying to, bring them in, get them involved, not be passive. So I'm doing something with that. I often in the opening session try to really recognize the first timers, get them to stand up, And I'll say to the first timers who are standing up, look to your left, to your right, turn around, front and back. Everybody sitting is a veteran attendee. Zero in on them. You guys sitting, look up. These are the people you need to know. And, you know, something as simple as that, even though there might not be time to set up an interaction, I acknowledge people that are there for the first time. So I often, on like day two, I'll get people to pair and share and talk about their biggest takeaway from day one. The other thing I do in my role is if they want to do a first timer welcome or welcome experience, I facilitate that. And I love those. It's probably like my favorite thing that I do because those are super interactive and facilitative. And by the way, I have the organization recruit current board members, past board members, current committee chairs. I mean, we do a big, and I call it an army of connectors, and we get them to come and they facilitate roundtable discussions for me. I set up the questions and then they facilitate it. And I do training with the facilitators. That's all part of what I do. But those experiences, I can't tell you how many times I've had attendees come up to me at the end of the week or send me an email a month or so later and say, I just want you to know the connections that happen in that continued throughout the conference. I never ate alone. I never had to go to dinner alone. I met people in that experience that continued. And by the way, those are growing. Those relationships have continued. And we can't wait to come back next year for a reunion and be together again. You know, the table of seven that sat in together in that experience. So it's so important. And it's not hard. It's a room that you're not using before your opening general session. You can find a room. And you don't have to do any decor or anything. It's just, you know, rounds. All you need is rounds. So, So I think those are the ways that sometimes, you know, I'm there the entire 3-4 days, whatever long the conference is, and I'm very visible. I'm out, you know, I'm in the expo or I'm going to all the meals. And so I'll talk to people. Sometimes I bring those stories in as I, you know, ad lib or open. With permission, I've been known to say, I met Julie from blah, blah, blah. Where are you, Julie? And Julie stands up, you know, here's what she told me was her biggest secret. Things like that, just to really acknowledge and make people feel welcome and recognize people and hear their stories.
You're doing something super important is you're engaging people's brains in an active way, which sets them up for active learning. Instead mm-hmm. of what often happens is we enter into our, you know, Netflix watching mode where we're passively watching it and it doesn't really get deep into our brain. And then you're asking them afterwards, okay, what's something you're going to take away? Now all of a sudden you're providing it on both ends. I want to talk about a situation that happens. It's not so much in a general session, I don't think, but in a breakout session. A lot of times when the MC wants to get going, maybe a little bit early to start engaging people, the people are spread out all over the room. They're on their phones. There's not like this energy where they're all sitting up front waiting for it to happen. What are some ways that you, even in that setting, can create some connection if you're an MC? Because I know you've probably had to deal with that situation where you're bringing people together who don't look like they want to be together.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I do, and when I do speaker training, this is one of my techniques I tell every speaker to do. You should be standing at the door, welcoming people into the room. You are the host of that session. And really, an MC is a host, is really the best way to think about it. And I am not at the front of the room looking at my phone. I'm not. Now, it depends on how big the production is. If it's a really big general session, I am backstage. I can't be out because I just can't be. There's too much going on to get ready to go live. But if it's a concurrent session or if it's the, you know, first time a welcome session, I am at the door. Welcome. Hi, where are you from? Susie, oh my God, you're from Boston. Come here. I just met somebody from Boston. And I'm bringing people forward. And I bring them to the front of the room because nothing's worse than having the first two rows empty. And I bring people forward. And by the way, I have worked with those army of connectors past board members. By the way, planners, if you are an association planner and those past pesty board members or those past presidents that are, you're looking for something for them to do so they're not bugging you, this is a great assignment. Put them in to be a connector. Let them round up the people. And they are, I tell them, you're at the front, you're at the door with me. You're welcoming people. You're bringing people to your table. You are filling your table. That's your role. Fill your table. And we're going to fill the front of the room and go to the back. And so I think that's just one of the best strategies. And if you're nervous about speaking, which 99% of people are nervous about speaking, public speaking, this is the best way to calm your nerves, because now you've met the majority of the room. You've warmed up the room. They're interacting. The energy is high. So by the time you start, they're not looking at their phones. They're not in silence because they're talking, because you facilitated connections before you've even opened your mouth.
Yeah, and even if you don't get to speak to the majority of the people in the room, let's say you only met 10%, it still has the ripple effect where
it does.
They're going to start doing that to others. Yep. And like you said, you know some people. You can maybe even call out their story if you're comfortable enough with your material.
Yeah, exactly. Or if it's like a concurrent session, a lot of times I'll say, why did you pick this session? And they tell me. And then when I open, it's like, so I've had a chance to talk to several of you and good news. You're all here for this reason. We're going to cover it. Or, sometimes I hear something really like, wow, that's why you're here. And, you know, and I'll call that out and with permission, maybe ask that person, you know, to acknowledge. But, it's a great way to calm your nerves and warm the room.
As long as they don't say this looks like a good place to take a nap.
Yeah.
No. Let's go to that welcome experience, because I love one way that you're talking about is you're creating an experience that's not just for first timers. It's really for anyone, but you're targeting solo and first timers. If I'm understanding you, that's the morning of your first keynote, or is it the night before, or it depends?
It depends on the schedule of the conference, but it needs to happen before your first opening, whatever your big grand opening is. If it's an opening party, if it's an opening general session, whatever it is, it happens before that, just before that, because you don't want to do it too early that people haven't flown in or aren't there yet. But when, you know, let's say your opening general session is 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, this would be 2:30. It would be
hour. It's not even a long party, just an hour.
No. I mean, they're usually 45 minutes to an hour. It's like 45 minutes of content or facilitated experience and a little bit of content. And then you buffer another 15 minutes because people keep talking, which is what you want. And I've often, if I have my say, it would be a full hour, hour and a half before the opening, whatever that is. And I have my army of connectors, Pied Piper, everybody down to the general. So my rule of thumb is nobody goes into that general session alone. They go in with surrounded by people they've just spent an hour with, sitting with a veteran. And sometimes they're sitting with a past president. Pretty cool that this is your first experience. And they come in. And often I've had, if I can get them to do it, the first couple of rows reserved for these people that did this experience. I mean, those are your VIPs. Why are you putting your board members at the front and your new people that you're trying to welcome in the back of the room, right? But anyways, I'm not very successful in getting people to do that, but I try to get people to, you know, Pied Piper up to the opening together. It's what you want to do.
Most people don't want to sit up front unless they have a connection. So let's talk through what you're doing, because you've got connectors. It could be a board member. If it's not an association, which I know people in this audience are a lot of different kinds of events, you've still got a couple of different kinds of people, in my opinion. You've got people who are just love connecting. They can't help it. Like what you said, oh, you're from Austin. So is so-and-so.
Right.
You like water painting. Well, so does so-and-so. We actually did that before the show. I told you two people who like water painting. I can't help it. So I think those are great people to enlist in that. But what I loved you did is you have them at tables. Are they assigned, or they just come in and sit at any table and there's a leader at that table, or how's that working?
There's a leader at every table. So I tell the Army of Connectors show up 15 minutes before we open doors. They get into the room, and just in case they missed the training or didn't watch the recording of the training, I do a very quick, one more time, here's what's going on. You guys right now spread out around this room, claim your table. Everybody claim a table. Put your stuff down. This is your table. And once again, we're all going to be at the door as people come in. As they come in, welcome them and bring them to your table. And then once you've got three or four people at your table, stay there, standing. And we will be sending people your way until your table's full. And we're going to start at the front and work our way back. And so that, yeah, there's no assigned. You just want to have a facilitator at every table. So you need to kind of plan, what do you expect your numbers to be? And then divide that by, you know, usually 10 people, you know, you can cram 10 around a 78 inch round. So, 10, and then, you know, divide that by how many leaders you need. And I always have, if it's an association or a corporate, you would have staff standing by that could also jump in if we're short. And people arrive late. That's going to happen because they're coming in and they're registering or their flights or whatever. So I always have staff at the doors once we start, because I'm in the front facilitating, and they're welcoming as they come in, and they're saying, come on over here, let me walk you over, not walk across this room by yourself in front of everybody, but walk them over to the table quickly, you know, help them find a seat. And you often see people walking in through the whole hour. People show up in the final 5 minutes, and that's why you want to have that buffer of time.
You
before
have
you're
some
opening.
Tables that you're bringing latecomers to, or you add in them to existing tables.
Sometimes if I have room, we'll design for like high boys. I love having high boys in the back because it's really easy for latecomers just to walk up to a high boy, and then that might be peppered with staff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you've trained them, the connectors. Mm-hmm. What have you trained them to do? Are there certain questions they're answering or asking?
I come up with the questions. They're open-ended questions. They don't have to come up with that. That's going to be on a slide that I'm going to show, and I'm going to kick, you know, I'm going to tell them, all right, now we're going to be talking, and here's what you're talking about. So mostly the training is around facilitation skills. How to be a good facilitator, what if scenarios, what if somebody dominates, what if somebody shows up late, what if somebody goes off on some tangent, you know. So it's basic, I'm training them on basic facilitation skills and their role really as a host in that session, and that what that really means and what that looks like and what it means as they walk into the general session, potentially with these people with them, not bailing on them, going and finding your friends, but sitting with them and acting as an ambassador of the organization. And for that hour, you got lots of time to see your friends. We're talking about an hour. That's really what it is. It's not a long training. You know, usually I do this in 30 minutes. I walk them through the agenda. They're very clear of what's going to happen. They're clear on their role. They know they don't have to prepare anything other than show up, be ready, be early. You're a host, you're welcoming people, and I'll prompt you on the questions. And here's how you get people to talk. Here's how you get everybody, you know, make sure you're passing the ball. Here's what to do if nobody wants to talk, you know, that's the kind of tips I'm giving them.
And so you're up front with these slides, showing each question at a time, providing your content, weaving the experience. Okay, I didn't picture that. That's really fascinating.
And I'm doing a little bit of content too, because networking is my passion. I'm giving them some idea. I'm giving them some tools, everybody in the room, on how to do Connexity, not transactional networking like we started off talking about. So I actually do about 10 minutes of content. And by the way, I also facilitate like an icebreaker exercise that is not a transactional exercise. It's a very much a facilitate. I mean, there's several things I do. It depends on what I'm going to do, but I do something to get everybody up and talking and meeting each other, not just at the table, but around the room. And then coming back to the table is the rest of the time is more facilitated with the people that are at your table.
Have you found it matters what you call this? Do people show up no matter what?
Yeah, I really try to get my clients not to call it a first timer because you're right that it should be a welcome experience that anybody, if you haven't been to this meeting in 5 years, this meeting hopefully has been updated and changed and doesn't look the same. And so they can, because by the way, there is a little bit of, here's what you need to know. We give shortcuts in this meeting. Like, do you have the mobile app? You need the mobile app. Everybody, if you don't have the mobile app, go over here after the session to get it. You know, I usually have like the board president or the CEO do a very quick welcome. And I remember what it was like my first time and, you know, do something. But this is not a time for you to march across the entire association and do a lot of talking at people. So I have to really work with planners on that. That's not what this is. We're going to do a couple of very important introductions, very tight introductions, and we're going to give a couple of shortcuts so that they know, like, this is some insider intel we're going to give them. But the majority of this time is for them to make connections, for them to meet other people, to help them design their journey. Because one of the questions I always have them talk about at the table is, what is a learning goal you have for this conference? What's a networking goal? And then the facilitator at that table can help them, like, well, did you know about this session? Oh my gosh, open your app, make sure you star this, because this is one you don't want to miss. Or you want to meet this person? Oh my God, I'll introduce you right after this, you know? So that stuff happens. And it becomes, you know, for a lot of people, this session sets the tone for the entire experience. They walk out, they'll tell me later that night at maybe the opening party, like, my God, it was the past president. I got to meet with them. And then they just introduced me to, you know, this person I've been following on social for 2 years. I just met him, like, boom. So, and people will say things like, you know, I never thought about designing my journey. I mean, most people are looking at the mobile app the morning of. Nobody's downloaded it, you know, nobody's really thought about it. And in the session, people end up kind of designing their agenda as a result of talking about what's a learning goal I have. What is one of my biggest pain points at work? What do I need to find? Resources. I do bring up the expo. If there's an expo, I'll say, What resources are you looking for? How do you navigate this floor to find what you need? And, you know, we make sure, do you know there's a mobile app that has the expo floor? You can search, you know. So those kinds of shortcuts really help. So I think not calling it a first-timer, although to your point, I tell the organization, you go into your database, super easy. You should be asking. If not, you need to be asking, is this your first meeting? Flag everybody that has checked the box, it's their first meeting, pull them out, do a very customized email. We're so excited you're coming here the first time. We've got something for you to welcome you. Make sure you're there by 2:00. And then you can also go in and isolate anybody that has an email that you know, you go to your database and look for people that have isolated emails. There's nobody else with that email address or that company address that you would know that's a solo attendee for the most part. Sometimes it's not accurate, but you know, there's ways to massage your database to find out who's coming, who's the only one coming from that organization or company. They should get one. Hey, we saw you're coming and looks like nobody else is coming from your organization. We just want you to know we've got this experience to help kick it off for you. And that's all it takes. But those kinds of targeted emails are so easy to do, but they're a little bit of time, but they pay off. I mean, nothing's more frustrating for me than when I've registered for a conference and I keep getting bombarded with, why aren't you coming? Why aren't you coming? You know, these generic, do you not know that I've registered? Have you not paid attention to me? Like, what? I mean, that's just the biggest turnoff to me, because today with what we can do with technology and CRMs, there's no reason to do that. It's so easy to set up these custom emails that just go out to everybody that you say to the database, who's here for the first time? Boom. Who's the only one from the organization? Boom. And stop sending, "We wish you were coming," when they've already registered. "We're so excited you're coming. Here's what we're doing."
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I love this whole idea. I want to talk about one more thing and then we're at the end of our time. Let's say that your opening is a party the night before your general session. If I've heard you right, let's say the party starts at 7. Mm-hmm. Would you then do this experience at 5:30 or something?
Absolutely.
Immediately prior, so that you again have warmed people up? Okay.
Yes. So you would do it at 5:30. Again, people march into that party with their group, or it's really like a Pied Piper experience, and they go into the party like that. I recently did one where the opening was a big party at Disney, and we did it. And then we all filed out to go get on buses, and people went onto buses together, talking the whole way. And nobody was in that park walking around with nobody to walk around with. That's what you do.
I think one of the worst experiences is what you've described. You know, if you walk into a room of more than 20 people and say, "Go network," for me as a high introvert, I'm like, I'm out of there if I don't meet someone in the first 5 minutes that I really enjoy. But if you've done this and you've made it easy for me to meet 5 or 6 people, or like you said, up to 8 or 9, now all of a sudden I probably connected with some of them. Maybe not everyone at the table, but I probably at least connected with 2 or 3.
Right.
I feel more comfortable. And to your earlier point, I'm a huge fan of doing it before they ever even show up. Get them talking to each other, making plans, connecting with each other, even if it's their very first time coming. That is possible. And I think it makes people feel a lot more comfortable know, okay, I'm going to meet Sarah when I get there. I can't wait because we have this in common. So now they're looking forward to something as opposed to, I don't know anyone. This is awkward.
Right.
I literally had this happen at our last event where someone left because they didn't feel like they belonged.
Yeah.
Like that belonging made me so sad, you know?
Belonging is huge. Feeling like you belong is everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Sarah. As I told you pre-session, I like to end it with what I call my signature sign-off. So what I'm going to do is ask you for 3 words, and one of them at least should be emotional. And since you're an artist, I'm sure you can do this. And then I'm going to play a response to that, and then we'll close out with some closing thoughts. So what are 3 words that you can think of?
I'm going to say connexity.
Of course.
Belonging.
Yes.
And joy.
All right, here we go. Connexity, belonging, and joy. Thank you so much, Sarah. That was a lot of fun. Great conversation. If people want to follow you, where do you recommend that they go?
Velvetchainsaw.com. You can follow me there. Yeah.
Now, someone's probably asking Velvet Chainsaw in like 30 seconds. Why that name?
So it was a nickname Dave Lutz, owner of Velvet Chainsaw, was given by a client when he helped them get out of an attrition bill that would have put the nonprofit out of business. And he went in with the GM, came out, GM wiped the attrition bill off, and the client said, "My God, you're the Velvet Chainsaw." And it was his nickname for a long time. And when he started the company 15 years ago, he said, "It's going to be Velvet Chainsaw."
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely a vivid metaphor, and can appreciate that's what it's about. And planners, that's what we have to do. We have to go in and be on behalf of our customers, associations, or our own event. We have to be aggressive, but in a kind, velvety kind of way. So amazing. Sarah, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmershawn.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.